Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. If it's a Monday, you know what we're doing on this podcast. Another ATP Challenger-centric episode from hosts Damian Kust and Jakub Bobrow. On today's show, they discuss Ramkumar Ramanathan capturing the first Challenger singles title of his career, explore the issues of holding outdoor European events in late November, take a look at the continued hard court improvements of Daniel Altmaier and Alejandro Tabilo, and so much more. It is another fantastic episode that I know all of you listeners are going to enjoy. Of course, I am well aware most of you listening to this on Tuesday, if not Wednesday. We do apologize for the delay in the release of this week's episode. We were a bit preoccupied this past weekend hosting the USTA Boys 12's National Indoor Championships here in Indianapolis. I actually discussed that event on Tuesday's mini break podcast with our friend from Tennis Point, Nate Walrath. But we do again apologize for that fact. No, nevertheless, still, even on a Tuesday, you all should enjoy this ATP Challenger update. Of course, it's off season now, and that means we're offering our biggest takeaways from the 2021 campaign, looking forward towards 2022. What are the storylines to watch? Which players will be those inflection points, swing players that often dictate the course of a season's results? We're going to explore all of those topics over the next month across our various platforms, whether that's on our website, crackedrackets.com, on this podcast, the Mini Break Podcast, Cracked Interviews Podcast. We'll do it across levels as well, focusing on not only the top 10 names, but players throughout the ATP and WTA Tour level, ATP Challenger, ITF level, college level, junior level. Plenty of fun topics for us to explore here this month, even if the tennis does wind down a bit. Of course, all of that content available on our website, crackedrackets.com. But you didn't come here to learn about those things. You came here to get an ATP Challenger update. So without further ado, let's get to it. Another ATP Challenger-centric episode from hosts Damian Kust and Jakub Bobrow. Westhoff, roll those credits. Let's get to today's show.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey, welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Podcast. I'm once again joined by my friend Jakub. Sorry if my voice is going to be a bit weird because I'm a bit sick. How are you doing, Jakub?
I'm also a bit sick. So we've converged at the perfect time. Hopefully we'll get through all the names, all the draws, and review and preview everything here today.
Is it you know what?
No, it is not COVID. Okay. But I just have this flu that I've had like for the past week or whatever. It's annoying.
I'm a bit afraid in my case it could be. Some of the symptoms, but that's cool. A week of not going to the university will only do me good, honestly. So where do you want to start?
Let's start in Bari. Because I want a point there.
Yeah, and that's actually the point. If you listen to last week's episode, I said that I just had one pick already listed before going into before starting recording, and then during that I changed it, and that was all changing Oscar Otte to Holger Rune. So yeah.
Yes. So Oscar Otte ended up winning the tournament. As the third seed, he beat Daniel Masur 7-5, 7-5 in the final. His fifth challenger title, third this year. He's now very close to the top 100. He's at number 102 now, moved up 10 spots. Not the hardest draw that he'll have. Beat Ovčarenko. He had a very tough match against Fancelo, pushed to 7-5 in the third, and then beat Coboli and Fabiano before beating Masur in that final. As for Masur, he's moved up 21 spots, number 183, his new career high ranking. And he only faced Italians before reaching the final, actually. He beat Andaloro, Forti, Nardi, and Vavasori. So what did you make of Ote and Masur this week?
I found a great quote from Andreas Mies, who was talking about Ote, like they're friends or something. I think they played doubles for a couple of years. I can't find it now. Okay. I have it. It's about Ote cracking the top 100. Like always when he was close and he didn't have much to defend when he was around number 130, he was playing nervous. He was feeling the pressure. So, you know, the whole week I was pretty much thinking about whether that's happening again. Like in the matches against Ovčarenko and Fanslow, I guess you could say that. But then again, it wasn't the toughest draw ever. But he was, to me, a tad nervous in the final, like the third game of the match. I think he lost his serve to Love, and then like with some absurd shot selection choices, and then also later in the match, like he was basically exposing Masur's tiredness, playing some moon balls even, which isn't exactly what Ote is doing, you know, most of the time. But I mean, Masur was still. I mean, it's an important factor that both semis were finished on the on Sunday, and
yes,
and Masur's win over Vavasori took a lot longer, and you could see that in the final. Definitely, he was trying to finish the points earlier. Still had enough energy to, you know, to be very competitive. It was a 7-5, 7-5, but he definitely adjusted his strategy to fit that, and Ote saw it. And like especially the late in the second set, it was just Ote really trying to make use of that. And Masur's trying to go for drop shots, all court tactics all the time, just trying to make these points short. But obviously Oscar Ote deserves to be in the top 100. We're going to see if he's going to do it this year, but I don't think it really matters. I know he's 15 points away. Defense pretty much nothing in the first 4 months of the season, at least until the US Open, when he'll drop like 205 points, I believe. He should definitely be in the top 100 and stay there, because it's, I mean, for the past 3 months he's definitely been a player of that caliber, and I think no one could really disagree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So he needs a quarterfinal pretty much in Forlì to overtake, I think, Cecchinato. It is number 100. I think that he'll get it this week. As you said, he should stay there for a good 9 months. And yes, yeah, some other guys to mention from Bari, Vavasori had a semifinal run. Very, very impressive. Beat Milojevic, beat Pellegrino, saving 5 match points in the second set tiebreak, which ended 12-10 for Vavasori, and beat Baldi before losing to Masur. And Luca Nardi, the 18-year-old wildcard, also had a nice run to the quarters, where he beat Maxime Cressy in the first round and Julian Lenz in the second round, also lost to Masur. Did you see either of these guys this week?
Yeah, it's, by the way, it's 15 points for a quarterfinal at Challenger 80, something like that, right?
I think so, right?
Yeah. So then he would be tied with Cecchinato if he doesn't, you know, the best 18 results, like he can only get a couple of points, I think. Or no, sorry, because you get 7 for a first round, right? And for a second round.
Yeah.
So then 8 for the next win. So no, he actually needs to go to the semis, it seems. Because after reaching the second round, he'd only have 7-4-7, and Cecchinato has 7-5-9. So yeah, it looks like he needs the semis there. Anyhow, other people in the draw. Yes, honestly, I didn't pay that much attention to anyone other than Ote from some point, because like it really seemed that this is a fantastic chance for him. Andrea Vavasori, we told him all the time on the podcast that he should play more singles, and he's doing that now and with great results. Also, the run was wild. Like the saving multiple match points against Pellegrino, then a retirement from Baldi. You never know what would have happened there if they played the second set. But still a very respectable result against Vavasori as well, against Masur. He really made him work for it. And it's great that this guy started playing more, because it seems like he can really, at least at challenger level, both on hard and on clay, he can definitely be a factor.
Yeah, I mean, and his doubles didn't suffer. He won the title this week, I believe, with Vega Hernandez.
No, he was in the final. They lost to Glaspor Heriovara, and they lost like super heavily.
Oh right, yes, yeah, that was the match. They won like three games.
Yeah, 6-3, 6-0. Yeah.
So, but still reaching the final and the semifinal.
Yeah, I mean, sure. It didn't suffer.
We'll see if he can sustain it for a full season next year, because I think that he'll try to.
That was on Sunday, right? Too. So had to be. So I think, or not?
No, I think they played the doubles final.
Oh no, they managed that on Saturday. Okay, never mind then. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else from Bari?
No, maybe just one thought that, I mean, it often turns out that holding outdoor events in Europe in November isn't that great of an idea. And I think we can see it in Bari. I think we're going to see it in Antalya, looking at the forecast and looking at how the ITF was held there this week. Like the weather simply isn't good enough often. And it makes for some, for some scheduling issues. Obviously the event was still held, so it's good, but maybe Masur can be some sort of a guy who lost on that a bit. We can't really know what would have happened, but he was visibly fatigued, and some people are gonna get that, because we're holding outdoor events in November. We saw it early in the year in Antalya, when there were these two challengers at the, like, between January and February, something like that. Mm-hmm. I believe they ended the first tournament on like Tuesday, and then had to play the other in 5 days or something like that. So I mean, it's maybe not the best idea, but I mean, if they still finish, maybe that's fine. Digression.
I feel like there are enough potential venues over Europe where you could just hold it indoors. So that's why it's a little puzzling to me.
Even this week we've got 4D, right? So which is an indoor venue, and they're gonna play there for 2 weeks. So Italy definitely has other venues than Bari, but
yeah. So the whole thing of having Bari now, I mean, when I saw that they were playing outdoors, I was pretty surprised. Antalya, a bit of a warmer climate, I guess, but even then in winter, they struggle with, as you said, completing the tournament. Let's go somewhere where I don't think would struggle at all. Manama. Sure. They should hold every week in Manama in Bahrain. Also would Ramkumar Ramanathan wish, for sure, because he beat Evgeny Karlovsky in the final there, winning his first challenger title on his seventh try. In the final there, he goes up 36 spots to number 186. The run was, I think, pretty good. Beat Orlov, Ajdukovic, got Oliveira in the quarterfinals, and Jay Clark. As for Karlovsky, he moves up 37 spots to number 265. He beat Mirza Basic, Johannes Hayates, Nuno Borges, and Yankee Erel. What did you think of Ramanathan this week?
Yeah, I mean, the draw was weaker, sure, but like the set of opponents that Ramanathan actually got, that's fairly good, I think.
Yeah,
it probably wasn't even his weakest final opponent so far. I think Santillan would probably take the take that title, which is obviously a bit infamous. But he Ramanathan lost his previous six Challenger finals, and I definitely thought that there could be some pressure on him here. We don't know how he would react if the final was anywhere close, but he just never really allowed Karlovski to make it close, And that's not really things that are pointed out about Ramanathan's game a lot, but Karlovski was also playing like this all-court tennis, very just attacking from every single first ball, trying to be the first one to jump at the opponent, go to the net. And Ramanathan reacted really well to that. I thought he returned well, and also just, passing shots, lobs. He had it all, really. And he had answers to everything Karlovski threw at him. And you just never would have, thought that this guy lost his previous six finals and might be having some sort of a mental block because of that. I mean, the win over Oliveira will be like the key one, because he was down 5-3 in the first set, and then just I don't think there were even any deuces, or maybe not even 30 points gained by Oliveira in one of these last four games. So, I mean, it was definitely not a good effort from the Portuguese, but still great for Ramanathan to finally do it. Honestly, before this week, if you asked me if he had a challenger title, I absolutely would have said yes. Never would have thought he doesn't, especially as he's reached even a main tour final, right? But he deserved it. If we talked about Liam Brody like earlier in the season before he grabbed his first challenger title, that he was probably the best player without a challenger title, not counting Gaston or Raonic, the guys who just broke through without it. But after Brody got it, Ramanathan is probably the next best choice. So right now we have to look for someone else.
Yes, yeah, I'll have to get on that, make sure I do my research on that. Somebody else from Ramanathan I wanted to mention, Yanky Erel, making the semifinals as a wild card, very impressive. Beat Kunesvaran, Moria, and Penniston, and he moves up over 100 spots, 108 spots. He moves up to number 429 now. Did you see Erel this week?
Not much, honestly. He was also just 1 point away from making the final, right? Yep. Too much points against Karlovski. He's a former junior slam champion in doubles, though. Virtanen, but he won a couple of 15Ks this year. Definitely seems to be going up, and I think he's also in Antalya this week, right? So
yes.
So it's gonna be interesting how he continues there. I mean, this is a great chance for him, that Challenger 50 events. If he plays as he did in Manama, then he should probably be able to get a couple of wins there as well. When we talked last time, we talked about the Ministry of Interior sponsoring that. I don't know if there was nothing funny at the event, actually. Like, when they showed the crowd, there were a lot of sheikhs and people dressed in traditional Bahrainian clothes, let's say. It's still very funny to me that the Ministry of Interior sponsors a tennis event. But I guess it's only natural in a country that doesn't have a lot of tradition tennis-wise.
I also wanted to mention Alexander Lazarov, who made the quarterfinals as a qualifier, beat Kozbinov and Hayates to qualify, beat Celik Bilek in the first round, and Fatic, but unfortunately to retire in the second set against Jay Clark. So quite unfortunate for Lazarov there. Anything else from Manama?
Who did you have as a pick? Because I had Celik Bilek and... you had O'Connell, okay. I remember now. Yeah, very tough opener. Celik Bilek Lazarov wasn't supposed to be a tough opener. I mean, at the point of picking, I didn't know it was going to be Lazarov. I just knew it was going to be a qualifier, but I still would have gone for Celik Bilek. Absolutely. Quite a big surprise there.
Yeah, O'Connell lost first round. But both of the guys that I went for that had like a tougher first round just lost it very close in the third set. So that kind of, I could have ended it this week, but...
Yeah, you kind of almost ended it, but there's still a shot. Yeah, nine tournaments.
It's and I'm up by three, so it's certainly doable. Let's go to Puerto Vallarta, where we have Daniel Altmaier winning the final over Alejandro Tabilo, who was your pick for the title, 6-3, 3-6, 6-3. Third challenger title for Altmaier. All of them have been this year. He moves up 16 spots to number 84. En route, he beat only Americans before the final, actually. He beat Michael Redlicki, Govind Randa, Zachary Sveda, and Michael Moe. What did you think about Altmaier this week, and do you feel like he like his autumn has been a success? I guess you sort of have to say that it has,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he got the top 100 finally.
He's solidly in the top 100, and I mean, he was bad for most of it, but
I mean, the like sheer craziness of having a Tabilo Altmaier hardcourt final is insane. But I mean, it's not really, you know, it's not something that happened by accident. Tabilo has been great on hard courts this year. Indian Wells, Lexington final, right, that he lost to Kubler. Altmaier reaching the final in Knoxville. I think Altmaier especially, he's serving so well right now, like that just allows him to stay just allows him to be aggressive a lot more. Even on a surface that's not really natural for him, but then again, his play style is actually good for it, and he was definitely like all over Tabilo in the final for the most part. He led 6-3, 1-3, 6-3, 3-1, then lost five games in a row, where Tabilo's forehand started doing some damage. Finally, he wasn't able to attack so freely anymore. But I mean, I was definitely really impressed at how Altmaier changed his game to fit hardcourts more this year, this week, and not only this week, but also Knoxville, to a lesser extent, obviously Champagne, because he lost quite easily to Watanuki there. But even against Tabilo, how many times he went to the net? He was really playing in the forecourt a lot. That's not something you would expect from him usually. Tabilo as well. I mean, I before this year, I would have never ever predicted that he would make two challenger finals on hard courts, especially as before Lexington, he never even had a final at this level. But we are always looking at him as a sort of a clay court specialist, right? And he's definitely far more than that at this point. And he's like really high ranked, right?
Yeah, he's at number 135 now.
Yeah, like honestly, I wouldn't say it seems wrong to me, but I just never really realized how high he was, how good his results were over the past, you know. I mean, it probably wasn't the whole year, but like the past couple of months have been absolutely excellent for him.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else I wanted to mention, Yosuke Watanuki, you mentioned him, back-to-back semifinals for him, which is quite impressive. He beat Statham, Tunglin Wu, and then got a retirement from Cuevas before losing to Tabilo in the semifinals. And Zachary Sveda had a nice run to the quarters, beat Langmo, Christian Harrison, and had a very, very fun match against Altmaier. He actually had a match point in the second set. What did you make of Watanuki or Sveda here?
Yeah, Sveda, I mean, I think I watched every single match of his this week, yeah. And he's like, he's frustrating a bit. Like, he's just so consistent. Like, he literally doesn't miss ground strokes, but that's pretty much the only thing he does. Like, there's very little, like, you know, willingness to finish points. Like he pretty much, it's very impressive. I mean, when I'm watching his matches, it's like, you know, the ball comes at him and I just know that ground stroke, no matter how he hits it, it's gonna be in the court. And it showed against Altmaier because the, like, he really made him work for it, but then you know, just I don't know if that play style is something that will get him, I don't know, to the top 50, to the elite of the sport, let's say. Like usually it doesn't, but I'm super excited to watch him more. That match was really good. Fight Altmaier was great. Like just seeing Altmaier forced to go for his shots, forced to construct points aggressively against a guy who literally didn't miss for two sets. That was definitely very cool.
Yeah, and finally we talked about Milic Kosu, who was in here with two wild cards. He actually he did get completely embarrassed. He won four games against Donald Young, and then won four games in the doubles with Pablo Cuevas against Hakredugo and Reyes Varela. So you know, didn't get a win or anything. Wasn't close to winning anything, but I guess he gave a good account of himself relatively to how we were talking about him.
Yeah, to his previous results, maybe, but yeah. Still, you know, the wild card system. Not really enough
to warrant the wild card, obviously. Yeah, anything else from Puerto Vallarta?
Probably not. I think we can go to Brasilia.
Sure, Brasilia, where we had the top two seeds face off in the final. Federico Coria, the top seed, beat out Jaime Munar, 7-5, 6-3. For his third challenger title, he moves up six spots to number 63 now. He beat Darderi, Leite, Londero, and got a retirement from Francisco Cerundolo en route to the final. And for Munar, he moves up also six spots to number 78, beat Alejandro Gonzalez, Santiago Rodriguez Tavetna, Thiago Seyboschult, and Pedro Cachin. What did you make of these two guys this week?
The top seeds made the final, and like we never really would have gone for that.
I never would guess.
Yeah, because in the past 3 weeks they really didn't play that well. Munar, I mean, I definitely was the one against Rodriguez Taverna, and for a while I thought he was losing again. By the way, I definitely cast some shade on Rodriguez Taverna in the past here. But I'm getting more and more used to the fact that he can actually, you know, be a challenger mainstay, at least in South America. His forehand is great. He's got his limitations, but he's doing well to work his way around that. But I mean, Munar was able to expose it more and more in sets two and three. I honestly find the final between Coria and Munar, and in general matches like that, very hard to talk about, because they're like, you know you're going to get these 30 shots rallies. Neither of these guys is fully comfortable, like, you know, being on the attack. Like, I don't know. Coria is a bit better because of his forehand. But then again, I think it was Munar who was the more proactive player there. And it's probably actually his, you know, not perfect, let's say, attacking game that allowed Coria to win it for the most part. Like, he was just able to expose how Munar is not exactly great, I don't know, at the net, or just trying to finish off points a bit quicker. But still, obviously, they give a great fight. They have these extended rallies that get the crowd going. They obviously played for over 2 hours, even though it was 7-5, 6-3. And it's great to watch, but it's hard to, you know, to say anything about these matches, at least to me.
It is quite hard to sort of, I don't know, make it interesting. But yeah, that's why I will talk about who won the doubles, for example. Mateus de Carvalho Cardoso Alves and Gustavo Haida, two very young Brazilians, took the doubles. So that was pretty exciting. And I also want to talk a bit about Cachin, his semifinal run, his first deep run at the Challenger since he won the title in Oeiras. Did you see Cachin this week?
Yeah, I mean, Pedro Cachin is one of, maybe not one of my favorite players, but I can't remember if it was when you were already on the pod or not, but I definitely talked about Pedro Cachin earlier in the year as a sort of a player that should be getting better results than he is. And then he won a challenger title in Oeiras. So I was very glad with that. Again, he was kind of under the radar since he had that 3 month break or 2 months. I can't remember how long it was, but anyhow, I'm definitely enjoying Pedro Cachin's tennis, and still think he has the potential to achieve more. I don't know, like maybe obviously not really a top 100 level talent, but like he probably shouldn't be like barely making it to most challenger events. To me, and it's good that you mentioned the Brazilians. There's been a couple of guys like Wilson Leite or Gustavo Haeda, you know, together with these with Melingani Alves or Puccinelli de Almeida, they're gonna get a lot of chances to play in the next couple of weeks. And while it's not exactly like fair per se, because you know, some countries don't have any challenger events and they have four or five in a row, but I'm very excited to watch them this week in singles. And actually, they didn't do that well. Or Gilbert Clear Jr. is another one. He won a match. He almost beat Kachin as well. Sabov Wild is obviously a bit of a different beast. Marigani Alves also won one match, so they didn't actually do, and later they didn't do that great, but it's very possible that someone like Haide will get a quarterfinal or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all for me on Brasilia. Sure. Anything else?
Yeah, we can just I had Francisco Cerundolo as a pick. He reached the semis, retired with a shoulder injury. I no way of telling if he would have been a factor in that match or not, but the first set didn't look that good.
Then he pulled out before the tournament even started, so that was another risk that didn't work out for me.
Yeah, I think Baez pulled out from everything at this point, right? So
a smart choice
for sure. Like, yeah. There's no need. Oh, he's actually still in Florianopolis. So
I'll be very surprised if he shows up to play, but we'll see.
How close is Florianopolis to the Argentinian border? that could literally be a factor, but I see it's on the west coast of Brazil. So it's not close at all. Obviously it's not on the north of Brazil, where it would be absolutely stupid for him. Like maybe not stupid, but I mean, yeah, it's still fairly close, but not, you know, it's not on the border, no.
Yeah. Should we go to match of the week and upset of the week? Sure. So my upset of the week was Lazarov over Chelik Bilek, 6-2, 6-3. Quite surprising, especially so easily, only dropped five games. Who is yours?
Yeah, the extent of it was quite shocking. Yeah, I kept thinking that Chelik Bilek has to make a comeback here, but he didn't. According to the bookies, it was later over Colarini, which is, exactly. Your face kind of says it all.
It's not surprising.
It is surprising, but it's not that huge, probably. I am going with Jan Kierel over Ryan Peniston. I really thought this could be Peniston's first title when we entered the quarters. He never really made any impact at challengers before this year, and suddenly developed himself into a mainstay. I think it was his sixth quarterfinal this year. Never had any before the 2021, and that loss was certainly a bit of a shock for me. A missed chance for him, if you may.
Yeah, for sure. And for match of the week, I went for Altmaier over Svajda.
Yeah. We talked about this match already, and yes, that's what I'm going for as well. I didn't really look at all of them, but.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very interesting match. It was interesting to see Altmaier put into these different kind of positions. I felt like Sveda sort of dared him to come into the net a lot, and he actually did okay when he was there for the most part. That rally to win the set for Altmaier, that was amazing. Just such a long rally, both guys just keeping it in the court, Altmaier putting the pressure on and on, Sveda somehow coming up with another ball to make him play. Do you have any other thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I mean, it was like super late in the night for me. I did have to get up early. I think at like 8 a.m. or something like that. And the match started 30 minutes past midnight, I think. So my idea was to watch it and then go to bed. But then it turned out that, you know, that's fine. I couldn't close it out in two. But I still ended up watching it till the end and barely waking up the next day. So, I mean, that kind of says it all. You know, when a match makes you do that, it's good.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to the previews then. Three events this week, Sao Paulo, Forli, and 50 in Antalya. Let's start with Sao Paulo. That's the first one that I have here. We had a withdrawal of the top seed. Pablo Cuevas has pulled out after retiring from, what was that, a quarterfinal last week in
Puerto Vallarta.
So now we have, we don't have like a number nine seed. It's just Andrea Colarini on top there. He's playing Gennaro Alberto Oliveri. The winner faces Casanova or Gutierrez. The only seed in the section is Felipe Meligeni Rodriguez Alves, who plays Peja Krstin. And the winner faces Nicholas or Uchida. Next section, we have Seymour Wild playing Alejandro Gonzalez. Winner faces Diaz Acosta or qualifier. We've got 7 seed Nicolas Kicker playing Nicolas Alvarez Varona. And he faces De Carvalho Cardoso Alves or a qualifier. In the third section, we have 4th seed Londero playing Gustavo Haide. So that should be interesting to watch. I believe this, then we have a qualifier and another qualifier or lucky loser in there, I think, right? Because it's showing me the Colarini is there, but I guess it's not updated yet.
Yeah, Colarini is at the top. Where? With Alves?
No, the winner of the Londero Haydn plays.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Qualifier, lucky loser, both. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. I just want to double check. 8th seed, Pedro Cachin in the section also plays Facundo Juarez. Winner of that faces Fikovic or Sid Zuberbi. And in the final section, we have a very, very interesting first round, I think. 2nd seed, Hugo Delien, faces Puccini de Almeida. So that should be pretty exciting for a first round. Winner of that faces Orlando Luz or Daniel Dutra da Silva. We also have 5th seed, Nicolas Jari, playing a qualifier. And the winner of that faces Sakamoto or Clier. What are your thoughts on the draw?
I really don't know what to go for here, so let me look at the qualies. Probably no one who can really make like a big impact, frankly. I mean, some players definitely seem interesting to me. I don't want to go for the bottom section because there's the Delian Puccinelli de Almeida match, then Jari could play one of them. So my thoughts are mostly around Kachin, maybe, and maybe also Meligeni Alves. Meligeni Alves hasn't been doing that well, but he usually gets that one good run in Brazil each year. So it could be that. And I think that's actually going to be my pick. Like, I just like the draw. And at this point, I mean, I have to risk it, right? It's 13-16. If I don't risk it, you know, risk it for the biscuit, yeah. When it comes to great first rounds, I'm really excited, as I said, about Puccinelli de Almeida Delian. Also, Gustavo Haide playing Plumbero. That could be fun. Alvarez Varona kicker is quite interesting as well. I think in 2022, Alvarez Varona could certainly play the Challenger Tour a lot more. And I think, yeah, I'm going to stick with that, and I'm going to go with Felipe Meligeni Alves.
Nice. I've not gone for Meligeni Alves there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird pick, but maybe it works.
Well, I mean, it sort of makes sense when you look at that. I mean, he's the only seed in a section, and the other guys in there aren't that threatening, I don't think. But I have
gone Casanova for could be. Yeah. I'm afraid of Colarini. I'm afraid of. Yeah, that's probably it.
But yeah, so I'm going for Kiker. He does have Sabo Schild in the section. But I was quite impressed with his win over Echeverri. Mm-hmm. Then he beat Fikovic, lost to Kachin. Why not? Nicolas Kicker for me.
Yeah, it's a reasonable pick as well. I thought about it, just, I don't know. Cyberfield, I also thought about it, honestly, and I just didn't want to, two guys that I thought could win it in one quarter. Okay, so we have some little off meta picks this time, maybe. But then again, I mean, Cuevas withdrew, Coria withdrew, so it's, and Delian, the highest seed, has a very tough draw. So
yeah. Let's go to Forli then, where we have top seed Oscar Ota playing Francesco Forti. In the first round, winner faces Richard or Bachinger. Also in the section, out of Celibilek plays Raul Brancaccio. Winner faces Sachko or Nardi. Then we have an interesting little comeback here, kind of. Lukáš Rosol is playing this event in the second section, which I was surprised by. I thought that he was pretty much done. He's had a horrible year. He's 36, and he's not played in 2 months at all. He played a 25K in Prague, which he lost first round, and he hasn't played a challenger since Sibiu. So it's been quite a while, but it's indoor hard, and he's playing a qualifier, so he might win a round. You never know. If he does win a round, he will face probably Yuri Rodionov, the fourth seed or qualifier. Also in this section, we have finalists from last week, Daniel Masur playing Pavel Kotov, and Flavio Coboli facing Andrea Arnaboldi. So a couple of interesting names in this section. Quite a fun quarter. Then we have a very interesting first round, I think, between Radu Albot and Andrea Vavasori. I'm excited for that one. Yep. Winner faces a qualifier or Matteo Gigante. So nice opportunity for a quarterfinal there for either one. Also in the quarter, we have 8 seed Tomas Fabiano playing a qualifier and Lukáš Mídler facing off with me as a Basic. In the final section, we have Maxime Cressy, the second seed, playing special exemption Yevgeny Karlovsky, who comes in after the Manama final. Winner of the face is Viola or Madden. So once again, a difficult first round, but an easier second round for whoever wins that one. Then we have 5th seed Federico Gallo playing Julian Lenz. And the winner faces Kamke or Stricker. From the qualies, Foretek just qualified, and so has Yella Cells. So those are guys that could mix it up in there for sure. What do you make of the draw, the qualifiers, the whole thing?
Yes. In the qualies, I think there are a couple of names that could potentially do well. We sort of mentioned Georgi Kravchenko as someone who could potentially break through, maybe like not to the main tour, but to the challengers next year. Jonas Foretek as well. That's when I was in Helsinki, he was potentially one of the strongest players there. Honestly, he just lost to Souza in a very tight match. Yes, there was also Philippe Pelivo, who made a return to the Challenger Tour since the pandemic, I believe. Yeah, definitely. He only played ITFs this year. A very disappointing loss to Marco Micheli. Yeah. I was expecting him to get through that. I watched a couple of his ITFs in Israel. They were, or in Kazakhstan. Some of these were streamed. And he did great. I thought he might, kind of easily win this. The last time I watched Marco, I didn't see that one, but the last time I watched Marco Micheli, I wasn't super impressed. He's a very funny player to me because one of my teachers at the university is an Italian, and her name is Micheli. So that's a player who instantly caught my eye when I saw him in the draw for the very first time. Anyhow, to the important stuff. Vavasori Albot, yes, that's what I'm definitely watching. Looking at like Arnaboldi Coboli as well, that's a fantastic first round. I am really tempted to go for Oscar Ota, because like usually when someone wins 1 week, then we sort of think maybe he'll withdraw or something. But here the probability isn't that big, mainly because he won Stats Top 100. And at least from some quotes from him, or even the one I read from Andreas Mies, it seems like that goal is very important for him. So I'm assuming he would really want to do it still this year. So, you know, not really expecting to withdraw. I'm definitely not impressed by Altuk Celik Bilek recently, including that loss to Lazarov. So the draw is kind of nice for him. And if fatigue isn't going to be an issue, which it fully could be, because in the, like, he's been playing for the last 6 straight weeks, something like that. So he's literally been playing every single week, and that's not ideal. But I think I'm still gonna go with Oscar Otte. I don't know. I just feel like maybe he does it again. I don't really have another option that I am fully comfortable with. So Otte seems quite natural to me. Even though, yeah, as I said, fatigue could definitely be a concern.
Otta is also have written about it, but it's actually interesting. Over these past, this is going to be the 6th week, as you said, he had Ismaning title, lost first round to Masur next week, title in Otise, lost quarterfinals in Helsinki, title in Bari. Is he going to finally make it back to back? We'll see. But I think he will. Like, I'm not picking anybody else. Oscar Otta is, I think, the best player in this draw. And I mean, the quarter is quite nice. The semi might be difficult, but playing Masur again, or maybe Rodionov will come through, who knows. But I have to go out there. There's no other choice for me.
Yeah, I can understand that, even though you're 3 points ahead. I mean, really, Otte, if there was a good option of all the other players, I would go for it, but there just isn't. He's better than the rest of the draw.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going for Staker this time. Like I did.
I wanna see him do, win a good match or two before I start picking him again. There's been a very big drop off in quality ever since that. I don't know, probably even since these 2 main tour quarterfinals that he made. Has he made a good run since then? Like there was that one when he retired in BL, right? Or to Brody, right? In the semis, that there he played well. But other than that,
let's move on to Antalya, the smallest event. We have Cem Ilkel, top seed, playing Ya Shu. Winner faces Baranko Kosano or Roka Bataya. Then we have Jeffrey Blancano as the 7th seed, playing Milian Jekic. Winner of that faces Giano or qualifier. Next section, we have Duya Ajduković playing Nick Chappell, first round. Whoever wins that has a nice second round in playing either wildcard Alexander Metreveli, who's from Georgia. So it's interesting to see him with this wildcard here, or a qualifier. Then we have Goncalo Oliveira plays Dalibor Svrčina, which should be a good opportunity for Svrčina, although Oliveira made the quarterfinals last week and wasn't easy to beat. Winner of that faces Peniston or Fatic. Next section, we have João Domínguez playing Ricardo Bonadio. Sorry. The winner faces Nick Hard or Aziz Dugas. Then in the same section, we have Nuno Borges playing Ergi Kirkin. Winner faces Tjurnev or Erel. And in the final section, we have Ramkumar Ramanathan, coming fresh off a title in Manama, plays a qualifier, and then Sanchez Izquierdo or qualifier. Then we've got Chun Sin Seng, no longer coached by Dominic Rabati.
Good, because I'm going to name check Pahu Chash in a second. So,
we need to get our quotas in. Then we have Ducky Lee, who I'm not sure if he's played a challenger.
He did a couple of them. I also forgot about it. Like I had to check that, but yes, he did apparently. But you know, it's not surprising that we don't remember that, because he did. You know, he lost in the first round at Oeiras, then another first round at Oeiras, 2 first rounds at St. Petersburg, and 1 qualis first round in Columbus. So he's 0-5, and most of these losses were very straightforward too.
Yeah, he's kind of getting killed out there. But you know, he's even this 15Ks, he's not winning them or anything. It's a quarter.
He retired last week. So.
Oh yeah.
He was actually up by a set against Jonathan Gray and retired. So.
Yeah, that's quite a shame. I'm hoping that he does well here. He's somebody that I cheer for. He plays Eduard Esteve Lobato. A couple of interesting names from the qualies. We have Oliver Crawford, Vladislav Orlov, Marcel Ilhan is here. He won his first quali round, which is interesting that they actually didn't give him a main draw wild card, I think, Ilhan, because he's probably the best Turkish player of all time.
He's definitely the highest ranked Turkish player of all time.
I mean, he's obviously 34 now, his ranking has dropped off, but interesting. And also I think Daniel Michalski is playing his match right now.
He's not anymore. I am going to say something about this.
So go ahead. Any thoughts on Antalya here?
I can just get Pavel Cesha out of the way. He withdrew out of this event, even though he was in the qualifying draw. So I'm assuming he's probably injured or something. He's still on the entry list for the next one. I don't know if we're gonna see him play. When it comes to lower ranked players, you know, the amount of information that we can get isn't great. Looking at the qualies, Ilhan, as you said, very very interesting because he won today against Giovanni Fonio. I definitely didn't expect that. The bookies didn't either when I looked at it. Ilhan used to be great, obviously, but his form right now isn't at all. But Daniel Michalski, yes. Originally, he was supposed to play three matches yesterday. The semis of a 15K against Lukas Gerg, then the final, and then the first round of the qualies. But the qualies were moved to Monday. And also, after the first set of the final against Cesar Cretu, it just got dark. They had to move it to... It was actually 9 a.m. in Antalya today, but it was 7 a.m. for me. So I woke up to watch this. The stream wasn't there for whatever reason. But anyhow, Michalski finished that match. He won the 15K, but he just retired after the first set in the qualies. And I am really frustrated about this because that's, in my opinion, that's actually his fault in a way too, because of his scheduling. Like, he really shouldn't be playing 15Ks. He can easily get... I know last week there wasn't any... there wasn't a 25K. But the previous two 15K titles that he got over, like, the last month or so, he has the ranking to get into 25Ks. He also had the ranking to get into Challenger qualifying. Like, literally, for the past few months... anyone with a ranking like 700 could play Challenger qualifying. There's just been so many withdrawals that some lists even got, you know, emptied. Like, that there were alternates. Even here, Migvelder is an alternate. And like, I just don't think that's the right way to go. Like, he can win these 15Ks, obviously, but it's 10 points for five matches. And now he just wasted a chance to... you know, to play in a much bigger event. Obviously, he was a huge favorite against Migvelder anyway. Then he would have had a fairly tough second round in the qualies. But these two Antalya events, I think, should have been the key, not playing 15Ks. But yeah, that's just something I'm really kind of angry at. Like, I just don't understand his scheduling at all. That there's just no point to play 15Ks when you're ranked, I don't know, 430, at least at this point in time, because there was a moment where that was literally the only thing you could go for. But right now, he could have easily played a lot of Challenger qualifying. You gotta shoot for the stars, not just be satisfied with winning a couple of 15K titles, which he can clearly do because he won the last three he played. You mentioned Alexander Metrevelli. Do you know who his grandfather was?
No.
He was the 1973 Wimbledon finalist, Alex Metrevelli. Oh. Yeah, he used to represent the Soviet Union, obviously, back then. but he was Georgian too.
That was the year that everybody boycotted it, right?
Yes.
And Jan Kodesz won.
That is, yes. Kodesz defeated Metrivelli in that final. Yes. That's exactly right. And there was a tiebreak at 8-8, which is quite interesting. But yes, 81 players boycotted it. So, you know, a bit of an asterisk on that. Not gonna lie.
Just a small 80-player asterisk. But
I mean, Metrivelli was still the world number 9 and still obviously a really good player. Got 9 ATP titles. Looking at the draw, it's actually really good. Like for a 250, there are some Borges Kirkin. That's a matchup I would be satisfied to get anywhere. Czemilka also a very important thing to mention. He's the first player. I didn't actually look at the draws, but I believe he's the first player to get that special wild card for a Challenger 50. Yes, because I will remind the listeners of the rules if they forgot about it. If you're like Challenger 50s, you can only play if you're ranked 151 and below. Ilka is like 140 something at this point. And there are two options to get a wild card. Like there's only one wild card like each. A player from the home country can get it if he's ranked from 51 to 100. And a player from any country can get it if he's ranked from 101 to 150. Obviously, Ilka, he could still get it if he's ranked like 140, obviously. But I just mean that, you know, if you're, it's obviously designed so that players don't just go here and vulture 50 points. And I believe no one was even interested in that up until this point, since no one played it. Ilka decides to finish, probably finish his year there, although maybe he wants to play another event in Antalya. I don't know if that makes sense for him, honestly. 50 points, just, you know, I guess the ATP was at first afraid of players, ranked, I don't know, 140, 130 going to these events just to pick up 50 points if they were able to do that. But it looks like just the payoff isn't big enough. The second seed, Remco Ramanathan, is like, what, 200? Like he used to be when the entry list was made, he was like 220, right? Right now, he's obviously much, much further up because of that run in Manama. Yeah, but his entry ranking was 215. So it's interesting because it's the first wildcard like that we get in the Challenger 50 event. It's going to be interesting to see if Ilkal will have any sort of edge over the field. Probably not that much, right? Like he's also not that good on clay. Like he only reached 15K finals on clay from what I see. Challengers, it's all been on hard courts. So I'm not sure he's winning this event at all. I actually don't know who I'm picking. So I was, you know who I was thinking of? That's crazy, but Chunhin's like, I mean, he's playing Misolic in the first round, and I don't like that. But he just feels like a player who could potentially get, you know, get that opening here and take it. Borges, I would usually go for probably, but then again, he plays Kirkin in the first round, and it's something that makes me really uncomfortable. So my mind just wants to go for a very random pick here. And I think I'm going to do it. I mean, screw it. As I said, I have to risk it. Ricardo Bonadio.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's another player who, just like with Kachin, I think he should be doing more. He hasn't played in like a month, but to me, he really has a lot of potential still. And he reached that final last year in Trieste, lost to Alcaraz. This is obviously a bit of a weaker field. And I don't know. I mean, this might just completely not work out, but why not?
Yeah, it's certainly a bold pick that I wasn't expecting in the slightest. I've gone for Nuno Borges here. Kirkin, I mean, it's a first round. That's kind of tough. But yeah, I mean, I quite like his section outside of that. So we might have a quarterfinal face-off between our two picks.
Bonadio Borges quarters, yes. I would be happy with that, honestly. Even if Borges wins, that's like, you know, that's what I expect from Bonadio.
Yeah, obviously I was thinking about Ilkel, but I didn't want to pick two top seeds. So I was trying to look at somebody outside of him. Maybe Ajduković. Ajduković could be interesting on this, I think.
Ajduković is certainly among players you could easily go for, yeah.
But yeah, Borges is my pick. So to recap, in Sao Paulo, I have picked Kiker. You have picked Melodini Rodriguez Alves. We both went for Ote in Forli. And here in Natalia, you're going for Ricardo Bonadio. Okay. And I'm Nuno Borges.
Yeah. I mean, if we get to last week and I'm not going to have any chance, just wait for my picks there. That's gonna be fun. Maybe I'm gonna try to go back to these themed picks. Like I only had this once, I believe, when everything I picked started with a B.
Yeah, including Fabiano.
Yeah, including Thomas Fabiano. Yes, because I was kind of struggling to find someone. I can't remember what event that was, but I don't think he did well there.
Yeah, no, I don't think I can't remember if any of them did anything. But
no, that was a good that was a very decent week for me. I think I won a point there even. Yeah, because I picked Botic for sure. Because he like sort of started with a B, and I believe he didn't win, but he like reached something. He definitely didn't win because he didn't win the challenger this year. But I also had Bonzi and Brooksby, and I'm not sure if Bonzi didn't get. I think Bonzi or Brooksby got me a point there, and never mind. I mean that's verifiable. That might not be true at all. But yeah, I remember outside of Fabiano, it was actually pretty fair. Like, you know.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anything else?
No, probably not. Yes, I know which week that was, and yes, Bonzi got me the point. It was in Segovia.
Yeah,
because that was I think that was the week with Poznań as well, and I picked Botic for Poznań. He lost to Lehechka in the quarters. Yeah. So yes, I actually got a point with my fin picks. Never mind. That doesn't really matter. You're still 3 points up. Very likely to win it, but I still have an outside chance, especially if Ricardo Bonadio and Felipe Merigani Rodriguez Alves win the titles this week. When you say it out loud, it sounds ridiculous. that's who I went for. I can only blame myself at this point. We're going to see you in a week's time when we talk about Antalya, Forli and São Paulo. Just 3 weeks this time, three events this time, so I was easily able to remember all of them. Any finishing thoughts?
Not really, no.
Cool. Okay, so I guess bye then.
Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hope all of you enjoyed another ATP Challenger-centric episode from hosts Damian Kust and Jakob Babro. A huge thank you to them, as always, for taking the time to record these for us. I say it every week. I'll say it again. You're not going to find two people further ensconced on the ATP Challenger beat than these two. So thank you to them, as always, for taking the time to record this show. Of course, if you want to read more of Damian's work, you can on our website, crackrackets.com. And you're going to be able to hear more from him throughout the course of this offseason as he's going to join me to cover some of our favorite topics as we look towards 2022. And again, all of that content available on the website, crackrackets.com. We'll be firing off these podcasts here on the Great Shot Podcast, Cracked Interviews Podcast with players and coaches, Mini Break Podcast each and every day, as well as we try to ensure you listeners remain the most well-informed, best educated fans in the business. Of course, why is all of that content possible? Because of the work of our super producers, Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff, who have a of an editing job to do day in, day out. A thank you as well to our friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. Promo code is CR15. Most immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shot Pod. With all that said, for host Damian Kustan, Jakob Bobro, our super producers Fligner and Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. Hey, great shot, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.